This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by the Education and Outreach Team for the Messenger Mission to Planet Mercury. Follow the mission as the spacecraft helps to unlock the secrets of the inner solar system at www.messenger-education.org.
You are listening to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
Year 3!
Enough with the theme. Let's get to it, shall we? The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast starts now.
Welcome to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, host of the AAAS radio show and podcast Science Update. The Greek hero Odysseus had to guide his ship between the monstrous shoals of Scylla and the consuming maelstrom of Charybdis. It's an apt analogy for the engineers guiding the path of Messenger, the first spacecraft to orbit Mercury. The spacecraft has to thread the needle between the searing anvil of Mercury and the gravitational vortex of the Sun. But unlike Odysseus, Messenger must not only pass through this strait unharmed, but pass through it again and again with each orbit, and explore everything in the vicinity. It's as if Odysseus had not only to pass by Scylla's razor-sharp teeth, but also conduct a complete dental exam. Eric Finnegan is a Messenger mission specialist.
Messenger is, out of all the spacecraft I worked on to date, Messenger is probably one of the most constrained missions I've worked on, because you do have all these competing requirements. You've got the thermal environment just from the sun itself. You're, you know, three times closer to the sun than we are here at the Earth, which gives you, you know, energies that are on the order of 9 or 10 times higher. You've got this planet that's also very, very hot, because it's also three times closer to the sun than we are here at the Earth. So you're seeing that environment. You're trying to take all these measurements looking at the planet, so you want to be looking at this hot surface.
On top of the thermal constraints, the team also has to contend with gravitational constraints. They're keeping the craft in orbit around a tiny, low-mass planet while being pulled away by the gravity of the sun.
Once you're in orbit, the solar gravity, so the gravity of the sun, tugs on the orbit and tries to pull basically the satellite out of orbit. So it wants to pull the altitude of the satellite and it's at its minimum point, which we call periaps. We want to pull it. The scientists want to be at about 200 kilometers altitude, but the sun wants to pull it all the way out towards it. So it pulls it up, and within about 44 days, about 88 days, it's up about 500 kilometers, and we have to do a maneuver to push it back down again. So every 88 days, we wind up firing the main engines of the spacecraft to push that orbital periaps back down to 200 kilometers.
What is that maneuver? What do you do?
Well, it's a maneuver we do at what we call apoapse. So this is the opposite part. So when we're furthest away from the planet, we turn the spacecraft such that the thruster is perpendicular to the radius to the planet, and we fire a thruster to lower the periaps.
And in addition to the gravitational pull of the sun, the team also has to contend with the pressure of the solar photons pushing on the craft and potentially destabilizing the orbit.
So the satellite, as it's orbiting around, again, the sun pushes on the satellite on all of its surfaces, on its solar rays and on the front of the sunshade. And then we rotate the spacecraft around to take pictures or whatever we're doing in terms of an observing plan. Well, the spacecraft, in order to maintain the stability, has a bunch of basically spinning wheels inside. Looks like your bicycle wheel spinning very, very fast. And those spinning wheels try to absorb any jitter or reorientations on the spacecraft such that it maintains a nice stable orientation. Well, the force from the sun is pushing on the spacecraft and causing it to move, and those wheels keep spinning up and spinning up trying to absorb that energy. At some point in time, they get spinning too fast and you have to slow them back down again, and that's what we do with a momentum dump. We take that energy out of the spinning wheels and we spin them back down again so that they can reaccumulate the momentum back up again.
That's interesting. I didn't know those existed in there. So how big are they?
The wheels are about a foot, maybe a foot and a half in diameter. They're made out of metal, so they have a lot of mass to them. And you know, if you're spinning very massive, like a big weight or something like that, it's got a lot of speed to it, and we can absorb a lot of momentum. So the momentum would be the combination of mass spinning and the rate of it spinning. So we have a fixed mass, and we just spin it faster to accumulate a lot more momentum and spin it slower to release that momentum.
That's so funny because you're building the spacecraft and the whole idea is to make it as light as possible. And you want these components, we want them to be as dense and heavy as they possibly could be.
Yeah. For Messenger, though, we had to, again, conserve mass. So we tried to choose the smallest wheels. And actually, we were a little concerned that they would be, accumulate momentum too fast. And we'd have to do these momentum unloads and momentum dumps very frequently. But the solar pressure on the spacecraft has been pretty balanced and it hasn't accumulated as much momentum. So we've been able to do momentum unloads about once a week when we're in what we call the new midnight orbit. So if you will, you're in the shadow of the planet, so you're not getting a lot of solar pressure, so there's not a lot of momentum building up. Then you come over the top, you get sun on you, and you get a lot of momentum build up, and it kind of goes through this cyclical orientation. That winds up storing a lot more momentum on the spacecraft. But we're in the dawn dusk orbit, so now the sun, you can always see the sun. You never go into an eclipse orientation. You've got a constant pressure on the spacecraft from the sun, and that's a much more benign state, and we don't have to unload the wheels quite as frequently, and we can do that every couple of weeks. Actually, I think we're going now about 3 weeks without having to unload the wheels.
He says the momentum dumps have gone extremely well, and so have the two orbital correction maneuvers, or OCMs, conducted so far.
And we've been very, very successful in orbit. We've been able to execute burns to a tenth of a percent error. So, you know, out of the hundreds of meters per second we might execute, only a couple of millimeters per second are in error. So it's pretty good maneuvering performance.
Well, and when you get that good performance, what's the result? You save fuel?
Well, you do save fuel, but from the science team perspective, there's no interruption to operation. So in many cases, when you do maneuvers, the science team would have to wait, figure out what happened, and then replan all their observations relative to where you are. Not big replans, but enough that it would affect operations. For the last two maneuvers we've executed, the science team probably didn't even know we executed a maneuver. Their science operations continued without any interruption at all. So, getting contiguous science operations is very, very important to them.
That's great. So the orbit that it's in, was that optimized to use the least amount of fuel? Is it like the closest you can get to something that people would be familiar with, where you go in orbit around Earth and you just stay there and for years and years until it decays? Or was it not optimized for that?
Well, our trajectory design team, their bottom line is how much delta V they can get squeezed out of the system. So those guys are always looking at the bottom line.
Wait, delta V for our audience?
Oh, yeah. Delta V is a change in velocity. Every orbit can be defined as velocity at a certain point. So we want to change the overall velocity of the spacecraft. We call it delta V, which is a convenient term. But our trajectory design engineers, they have DNA that says, I want to minimize the amount of delta V it takes to do this maneuver. So they're always looking for the optimum place to put it. In most cases, they can do that. For Messenger, unfortunately, due to some requirements in order to monitor burns from the Earth, which means we can't execute one of these large burns when we're not looking at the spacecraft, that tends to place some of these maneuvers in off-optimal positions in order to do that. So it causes our trajectory design engineers a little angst to, I could do a great maneuver here, but you're telling me I got to be off a little bit. So
they're like hypermilers.
Exactly. They're trying to get the best fuel efficiency out of the system as they can, and and sometimes there's other requirements that cause them from not being able to do that, but they're very efficient in planning those burns, and we do squeeze out a lot of performance.
And then there's the science team has their own requirements, so there might be a great orbit that would be good from the point of view of the trajectory, but it may not be good for the instruments, it may not be good for what the science team wants to gather, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our imaging team would love to be low all the time, and some of our particle measurement folks would like to be at 200 kilometers, at circular orbit. Unfortunately, the spacecraft wouldn't be able to stand that. It would get too hot or probably melt or burn. So we have to get at a very high altitude away from the planet for a certain amount of time in order to cool the spacecraft off. And that's a trade between getting the science people one and making sure the spacecraft will last a long enough time to keep going.
Huh. And so the success so far with the different maneuvers you've done and been able to do them so efficiently, has that had a long-range result on the mission, or can't you say yet?
Well, absolutely. Again, we measure our performance in delta V and our delta V margin, the amount of delta V we have left at the end of our 1 year of operations is fairly large. I mean, to the extent that we could operate the same mission over again for another year and possibly even two more years. So conserving that delta V, being efficient, allows us to be there longer and take more science observations over a much longer time frame.
It's not known yet whether NASA will approve an additional year or more of data gathering for Messenger once it completes its planned one-year mission in March. But if they do, Finnegan and the rest of the team are confident the craft will have plenty of gas in the tank to keep exploring. For the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, I'm Bob Hirshon.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Cool.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until next time, goodbye.